This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. The United States still isn't interested in the Kyoto Protocol. No real surprise there, but that's one of the main messages being delivered at an international meeting on climate change policy taking place in Montreal, Canada. The Montreal meeting, sponsored by the United Nations, is looking past the Kyoto Protocol. That agreement was set up in 1997, but many of its provisions just went into effect last February, and some of them run out in 2012. The U.S. never signed on to the agreement, saying mandatory limits on the emissions of carbon dioxide would wreck the U.S. economy and put it at a disadvantage against developing countries like China and India, who are not included. Joining me now is Eileen Clausen. She's the president of the Pew Center on Global Climate Change. She's been following the meeting. Welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here.
What would you say is the mood of that conference?
Well, I think with the exception of the U.S., as you already pointed out, there is actually a pretty good spirit of cooperation, and I think a set of decisions will probably come out of the meeting that begin the conversation about what should happen next.
And since the Kyoto Protocol was talked about and many years ago, isn't it true that emissions have actually gone up on many of these countries who have signed on to it?
Yes, it's true, although I think we have to give countries a chance to reach their emission targets, which they don't really have to meet until 2012. Mm. Now, will all of them meet those targets? I don't think so. Will some of them? Probably. And more important, I think, is that almost all of them are making a really serious effort.
What kind of agreement do you see coming out of this meeting?
Well, I mean, there won't be any specific agreement. This meeting was really to launch actually two different processes to think about the future. One of them would be under the Kyoto Protocol, and it would apply to developed countries only, and would really talk about what kind of process so that another set of numerical targets could be agreed upon well before 2012. The other one, and actually in many ways I think this is equally important, would take place under the convention, which is sort of the mother agreement to which the U.S. is a party. And in this one, there is an attempt by all countries except the U.S. to agree to start a conversation about approaches other than targets and trading that could actually move us toward meeting the goal of the convention, which is really to get to a stable climate.
Mm-hmm. I'd heard word that there would be a sort of a splinter group of members called the Asia-Pacific Partnership, which was going to hold its own meeting in Australia in February.
Well, that's an interesting point you raise. The U.S., because it doesn't really want to do things under even the Framework Convention to which we are a party, did decide to try to work with a group of countries, including Australia, Japan, China, and India, in this Asia-Pacific Partnership, and they will be having a meeting in Australia in January. But I think it's interesting that all of the countries, with the exception of the U.S., also believe that a truly global approach is important under the convention, and they are all supporting the beginnings of this conversation under the convention, except the U.S., who will go to the Asia-Pacific Partnership. After all, it's their initiative, and will try to get something done. But, you know, the Chinese representative at the meeting said what can happen under the convention is going to be much more robust and result in much greater emission reductions than what could happen under the Asia-Pacific Partnership.
And the Chinese, who did not sign on to Kyoto as well as India, are they expected to reduce? They've been having terrible pollution problems. Are they really expected to reduce their emissions?
Well, let me sort of say one thing first. They actually are parties to Kyoto. Mm-hmm. So they did sign on. They just don't have specific targets,
right,
because the only ones that do are the developed countries.
Right.
I don't think that they expect to be reducing their emissions, certainly not in an absolute way, mm-hmm, because their economies are still growing. Their energy demand is huge and will probably continue to grow at a pretty rapid rate. I think for them the issue is a cleaner development path, more use of renewables. If you're going to burn coal, which they both are, it's to do it in as efficient a way as possible, and hopefully with carbon capture and sequestration. It's to try to get good standards for automobiles, so that there is less carbon that comes out of that, and also, incidentally, less pollution as well. So I think they're looking at cleaner growth paths rather than absolute reductions.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. We're talking with Eileen Clausen of the Pew Center on Global Climate Change about the meeting in Montreal. Were there any talks that, you know, maybe we made some mistakes in the Kyoto Protocol that we might want to tweak and change in any new agreement that comes out?
I think there's a real openness to look at what will really work. I think even all the Kyoto parties, and even the Kyoto parties with targets, recognize that they are very difficult, recognize that maybe they haven't yet driven the technology in the way it needs to be driven, recognize that there could be sectoral agreements or other kinds of agreements that could also work. And actually, I found them remarkably open to not only the Kyoto path, but to other paths as well.
Such as?
Well, I mean, one of the things that we've been looking at is sort of sectoral agreements which would deal with competitiveness issues. If, for example, the aluminum industry on a global basis could agree to reduce their emissions, well, that's something that should be sort of acceptable under the treaty as well. Mm-hmm. If we could get the automobile industry to do the same thing, which is more difficult, on a global basis, that could make a huge contribution. And those kinds of paths, I think, should be pursued, as well as sort of economy-wide reduction targets for countries.
There is also talk that that cities themselves, and I've been reading about different groups of cities, including Seattle, other cities, are saying we'll take on our own burdens of reducing emission levels to the Kyoto levels.
Yeah, there is a huge number of cities in the United States, actually,
yeah,
as well as abroad, who are setting their own targets. They're not binding, but there's real activity at the local level. In the U.S., there's real activity at the state level. We just don't have a very robust program at the national level.
1-800-989-8255. Greg in Vermont. Hi, Greg.
Hi. I just wanted to say that in even NPR's coverage, it's often talked about the cost of cleaner technologies, but there's not a lot of quantification of the cost of not using cleaner technologies, like the actual cost of climate change.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to make that comment.
All right. Eileen?
Yeah, it's a valid point. It's been hard in some cases to quantify what happens if you don't deal with this problem, but all the work certainly that we've done and that some others have done suggests that the cost of inaction are going to be much greater than the cost of action.
Mm-hmm. But there's really no timetable that's going to come out with an agreement from Montreal here.
No, I mean, it's a process which hopefully will result in a timetable.
Mm-hmm. Does the U.S. look any closer at all to budging on its position?
Well, I mean, every time this sort of more open conversation has been suggested under the Framework Convention, the U.S. has walked out of the room. So it is, and when they've made public statements, they've said, we don't want to engage in any negotiations or conversations. Mm-hmm. I think the real question is, will they prevent others from doing it by trying to block a decision? And the answer is, I really don't know. That probably won't happen until sometime later today.
Did you really mean literally they walk out of the room?
Yeah, literally they walk out of the room.
Huh. What kinds of credits and things are they talking about trading? Are they talking about the way we trade pollution credits in the States here?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
Well, I mean, one of the big items, you know, in the States here, we have where you can trade credits for pollution.
Yes.
Can you do that with emissions also worldwide?
Well, Kyoto permits it. The mm-hmm. EU trading system certainly works that way. I mean, can others join in the EU trading system? I think there's an interesting question about whether, for example, the states in the Northeast, who I believe next week will announce their own trading system, whether they will find a way to link with the EU, but I think it's possible that they could. Mm-hmm. And then there would be a more robust market, you know, more players in it.
Mm-hmm. I'm surprised to hear that you think there's an upbeat mood here, but we don't see anything really tangible. It may be something behind the scenes, but we don't see it tangible in the public eye.
Well, you know, it's very it's very hard, I think, for people to think of the beginning of a process as a real concrete result, because, of course, it isn't. And it's going to take some time until you get one. But I mean, for those of us who are close to the process, a decision to move ahead and negotiate something more concrete is at least a step in the right direction.
But you might argue that that's what you said in 1999. You personally, that's what happened in 1992 when we started going through this whole thing.
Well, it's true. And the result of that was Kyoto, which, for all of its flaws, and despite the fact that some countries may not meet the target, has actually resulted in quite a bit of activity, some of which is positive. The EU trading system is really positive. The fact that some countries are seriously reducing emissions is very positive. I don't think it would have happened without the Kyoto Protocol.
Mm-hmm. But we still do have a lot of countries, like Canada, I think, emissions were up 25%.
Yes. I mean, Canada, which did sign on, has been moving in the wrong direction. The U.S., which didn't sign on, has been moving in the wrong direction. China and India, which are expected to grow, have been growing at pretty rapid rates. So, yes, we're not a lot closer to actually solving the problem.
Are they at least sympathetic about the problem, these big countries?
Yes. I mean, I think they are. But one thing I can say for those who signed on to Kyoto targets, I think most of those countries did not understand that it was actually quite difficult and that it really takes a lot of time to turn these ships around. I mean, you've got things under development, you've got increasing demand, in some cases mm-hmm. you have population growth. Can you make these changes? Yes, but can you make them instantly? I think the answer is no, which suggests that you need slightly longer time frames and a much more robust set of milestones along mm-hmm. the way.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you very much for taking time to talk with us.
My pleasure.
Eileen Clausen is the president of the Pew Center on Global Climate Change. She was talking with us from Washington. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to take a virtual trip, at least, out to Saturn, talk about some really interesting new discoveries about the moons of Saturn. Usually talk about the moons of Jupiter a lot, but Saturn's moons are looking to be quite interesting themselves. So stay with us. We'll be right back. Mm-hmm.